This is the September 1 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden from Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Rich Nelson joins us from Allendale and McHenry, Illinois. And Mike Zuzlo is here at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Online at WILLAG.org. You can just click and play our programming from there. There's also a podcast tab where you can subscribe. Just look inside the players for each of our programs and you'll see a subscribe button, or just search us out in your favorite podcast application. Places like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, even Audible if you use those. In fact, if you have an Alexa or a Google at home, you can probably, if you're already subscribed to the podcast, just ask them to play it in your house. However you want to listen to us, thanks so much for joining us at Illinois Public Media. Now, Rich Nelson is here. He's with Allendale again out of McHenry, Illinois. They have completed and released a survey this week of farmers across the Midwest, trying to find out what kind of yields they expect to harvest this fall. Thank you, Rich, for taking some time with us. Tell me about the survey, some of its history first, and then we'll get into the numbers.
Sure. So for 33 years, we've conducted an annual farmer survey. So this is not a crop tour. This is a farmer survey in the month of August. This year's survey ran August 15th through the 28th, so through this past Sunday. And as far as overall discussion points for us on the corn side of things, the survey is quite strong. 9 of the past 15 years, we've been within 0.8 bushels of USDA's general September estimate. For the other 6 years, if we are wrong or off, usually the survey is a little undercounting on corn, perhaps 2 to 3 bushels. For soybeans, this survey generally does undercount numbers just a little bit here, so that'll be really interesting to see, especially as we have our discussion about a 172.4 bushel per acre corn yield, that's down 3 from USDA, and a 50.9 bushel per acre soybean yield, that's down 1 bushel from USDA. So definitely a small step down in terms of supply. We'll certainly see what USDA has these next few weeks ahead here.
You talked about some of the historical context. I'm wondering, in poor years, are farmers more bearish about their crop generally than USDA shows?
And that's exactly true. And we do have a clear history on this. When things are bad, when yields are bad, generally they give us just a little lower than USDA numbers. So there is a small adjustment when things are bad. Now, I will point out very clearly, for this year's numbers, they didn't qualify for most states to make any type of real adjustments. The states we're kind of noting in terms of our survey, which are of a little bit concerning here for us, South Dakota, Nebraska, as well as Kansas. One thing our survey did suggest was Iowa would see moderate declines, but not anything serious that gets our attention there.
Mike and Ellen, and I think, Mike, I'll start with you. Do you have questions for Rich about the survey?
Yeah, Rich, thanks for being on and talking to us, first of all. I'm guessing that you have data, or you have a mindset as far as these numbers you put out, and I'll just say you're at 172.39 on corn, 50.86 on beans. And do you have a mindset, or do your brokers have a mindset based upon the survey, if this is going to head down, if we're hot and dry in the first half of September, or what does history suggest? And kind of wrapping that with a secondary question that fits in is, the market's under the impression that the corn's kind of cooked, it's kind of done, but the beans are wide open. Is that your sentiment too, with having done this survey? Thank you.
You know, Mike, that's a great question. And as far as your second point there, as far as how set are these numbers to speak of? Now, as far as the corn, I do think we're kind of set there. But soybeans, I think we can all agree where there's a bit of play with these numbers and a bit of uncertainty. And especially these past 6 years, we've learned that really the combine yields are a little different than the August-September expectations. So I will certainly give a little more freedom on the soybean yield discussion for that movement here. You know, for the second, or for your first question, for these, how does weather impact early September? We do know from our weather modeling that the September weather issue is a big question. There's not really a strong statistical evidence that we can say this has to happen to yields, you know, in this type of scenario for a September weather event. We do know it certainly could stress things, but we're not quite sure in what way. So at this point in time, I think most of us do feel that the core numbers are more or less relatively a little more solid, and we would certainly give the soybeans a little more play in terms of yield numbers in the months ahead here.
Ellen Dearden?
I had a question about in your survey, did you separate the irrigated from unirrigated, particularly in states like Kansas or Nebraska?
You know, we don't. And I'll be very clear. We simply modeled this after USDA's general farmer survey. So our survey is designed more or less to match up with how USDA is going to give us a potential number here for September 12th. And in terms of this discussion on irrigated, no. We will have producers ask us and give us numbers separately for their whole farm operations or for separated out by irrigated, non-irrigated. But really what we're looking for is a discussion on total numbers. And for you guys, as far as full disclosure, I will wholly point out that Kansas and Nebraska, in terms of doing yield surveys or crop tours, these two states specifically are quite tough to nail down, specifically because of that irrigated, non-irrigated issue here.
Talk to me a little bit about the Kansas number and the Nebraska number. You're at 126 bushel the acre for Kansas. USDA is at, what, 123 in August. And in Nebraska, you have a 175 number. USDA is at 181. How confident really are you in this case?
You know, I have moderate confidence, and that's really all you can have at this point in time. We all understand that yield estimation in the month of August is a bit tough, and there's a little play still in these numbers here. Now, to give kind of some clarity about these numbers on the corn side, our Nebraska estimate is down about 9% for what we consider trend yields for that state. You know, Kansas, we're looking at 7% cut on the corn side versus trend. South Dakota is a real big question for us, down 10. So I have questions about Nebraska as well as Kansas. I'm actually going to go throw North Dakota in there, especially with the fact they have a 10% cut for corn versus trend using our numbers, and specifically for soybeans, down 17% from trend. And that's a big question for us. So I think there's concern with the two previous states, but I'm also going to throw South Dakota in there as maybe a little wild card right now.
And can you talk about the Iowa-Illinois numbers, Minnesota as well, which was very large? That's expected, I think.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true here. And the issues for us are really the whole eastern Corn Belt. We're basically anywhere from 2% below trend to 2% of above trend. So really the discussion about eastern Corn Belt, that's we can all agree, is going to be pretty much right at trend. It's not going to be massively over, but it will be a very good crop to speak of. Now, the question for us about this western Corn Belt was really about Iowa and Minnesota. Where would these numbers kind of lean in or to help offset some of the problems west of them? For Iowa, our numbers there, 198 bushels per acre, that was down 7 from USDA's own number, but it's not that bad, down about 5% from trend. And for soybeans, our numbers were only down 2% versus trend. And as a reminder, these numbers did, for the most of these surveys, they did mostly come in before those recent rains here in just recent days. So some of these numbers could be cooled off a little bit here in recent days with this recent rain here.
Rich, I guess with what's happened here, especially after the close of August, I think the market's starting to realize the demand issues are starting to crop up again with China's new lockdowns. And I was wondering, with these production numbers of 14.108 on corn and 4.435 on beans, what you're looking at in terms of total demand and obviously what the ending stocks numbers are using your survey numbers.
So, you know, Mike, I think that's a good discussion point for in saying, well, we're going to lower production a little bit here, but where does this mean? What does it mean for ending stocks and therefore price? And, you know, with our recent lockdowns here for Shenzhen as well as Chengdu, now we're looking at about 30 million citizens are now in lockdown phases for a few days at a minimum here. And many other cities are now adding a little bit more in terms of that discussion. As far as our viewpoints on this issue, I think for soybeans specifically, the positive news, as we know, is we do have a buildup in previous months of these new crop export sales. Questions about how much will be seen these next few months. As a reminder, we did roughly about 28, 29 million tons to China here in this most recent completed export year. We'll probably do a 28 to 30 maybe total for this new crop year. I don't see that changing in a dramatic fashion yet, even though we do have concerns about processing margins and other factors. So I do think that will show up, but perhaps not until China sees how well this planting situation for Brazil goes in these next few weeks. As far as stock numbers, let's just jump right into this on the pricing side. So USDA is just under 1.4 billion bushels for corn stocks. We're now with these numbers and a demand adjustment, we're now in the mid-1.2s for corn stocks. So really in terms of price, I have that meaning December corn at 650. I can't yet get to a price above, you know, $6.90 or $7 until we see corn yields below 170. So I personally don't have that in the mix just yet. For the soybean side, USDA in August was at 245 million bushels with a 96 million bushel production cut and some type of demand offset. We're now looking at our own numbers, roughly 180 million bushels. That can support a trade up to 1420. But just like for corn, we can't find this story yet suggesting we have an argument for $15 or above for this November soybean contract. So corn, we're suggesting, yes, we could probably have a little more play for slightly higher pricing here and there. Demand argument does change these next few days. For soybeans, we have a little harder time making an argument for pricing into that upper $14 range that holds here, though.
Alan Dearden, there have been a lot of supply-side numbers that have come out in the last couple of weeks. ProFarmer, Allendale, Farm Futures, many cooperatives across the Midwest. I'm wondering what you're thinking about them as a whole.
You know, I think that the biggest question that I've had from producers this week has all been focused on supply and pretty much just ignoring the fact that demand has already slipped and that it's difficult once we see demand starting to not fall apart, but just back off, that it is difficult to, boost that back up without some big change. And certainly the value of the dollar at 20-year highs is not doing us any favor on the export side of things.
And what's your assessment of what you've heard about yields and acreage?
See, here you are talking about supplies again, and I think we need to be focused on supplies versus demand, because that's where we get price.
Let's turn that. Start with the cattle market for me.
Okay, numbers are down. Numbers will continue to go down all the way into 2025, probably, before we really shore things up. We've got pretty good ethanol margins. We've got not a lot of livestock feeding. So we've got livestock feed slipping. We've got ethanol margins and, you know, probably not shored up on the short term. And we have a policy situation that Washington would like to eliminate all kinds of fuels, and ethanol seems to be one of them. So where's the demand going to come from? I mean, we thought we were going to get a big boost in demand when the Ukraine got out of the business of exports because of the war with Russia, and that didn't come to pass. So I don't know where we're going to be seeing a big flush of demand coming into this market.
Mike, your assessment of the demand side for the corn and the soybean market?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ellen brings up a great point. I do think, though, that like USDA came out with their ag update, their ag trade update. They do it in May and they do it in August, and they raised the wheat volume numbers by 2.3 million tons for 23 versus 22 marketing year. And they took the corn down about 500,000 tons, but they also took the corn down about 1.5 million tons for the current marketing year. But they specifically said that was due to South American competition. And when I looked at the Brazilian exports of commodities today for the month of August, their corn exports were up 74% in August 22 versus August 21. I know that's just a snapshot, but I do think it is representative of a strategic shift by China to go to South America versus the United States because of all the things that we're knee-deep in right now politically and geopolitically. So I think the demand is holding up better than maybe what we're fearing it's going to go down. It's like Ellen was talking about the livestock numbers. Our dress weights were up 3 pounds last week. We are headed lower in the supply. There's no question. I agree with Ellen wholeheartedly, but we're still putting a lot of females into the slaughter mix. And our weekly kill and production last week for beef was almost 4% higher than the week, same week last year. So I'm in the camp that if we would, like Ellen, if we would put demand and supply together, having shaved $2.25 off the bean price from the August high to where we closed, I think we're still in pretty good position to keep a very strong demand base, especially in the wheat, because I just don't think we're getting the wheat out of Ukraine like they need it. And the world market's going to come to the realization in the next 60 days that we need to get some wheat from somebody else.
From this point, and I think I'll ask each of you to give me an idea, corn, soybeans, and wheat, are we sideways in through harvest? What direction do you think we would move, and are we just simply going to drift? It doesn't seem very clear exactly to me. I'm hoping you can give us some guidance in this. Rich, why don't you start with that question?
You know, I do think that even though our late August rebound in corn and soybean prices is contra-seasonal, you know, usually we're going straight down until near harvest lows or so. So I do think for right now, our soybean story is maybe a little more of a clearer one, for, in my opinion at least, where perhaps you can argue some demand pushback and the lack of any serious large concern about U.S. supplies. So on this one, I can argue in this case, perhaps going down and filling that gap below $14 on this November soybean contract, I think that's reasonable discussion for us in the short term. As far as the corn side, I can argue maybe a little more of a sideways discussion, at least until we really have a better handle on the yield argument. You can certainly argue there's play on the corn side for demand, certainly with the corn for ethanol and the fact that we've had a 20-week-long pushback from U.S. consumers on ethanol demand and general gasoline consumption. So I do think for this, there's a little more of a balance factor here, perhaps for right now, maybe a 620 up to 670 range, at least in the next few weeks ahead here.
Ellen Dearden?
Well, if we do get down to 620, and I think there is pretty good support there on the December futures, we would fill a gap that we left at 631, and there's been a lot of discussion that that gap's going to stay open, and we'll take another run up at the gap that we left at 4.25. I think that the beans have less bullishness in this time frame, particularly need to get past the September 12th crop report. The corn, I think, can just be mostly sideways, maybe between 630. So I'm a little bit higher than Rich in the 655, 660 level. I think it's going to be a little bit of a pivot point. 670 probably will hold rallies.
And Mike.
You know, Todd, I kind of feel like we just went through in the last few days what we went through back in July, where the wheat had to test a long-term support line on their monthly charts, and those support lines held. So I'm kind of back where I was roughly 20, 30 days ago, feeling like if the wheat can hold support, the corn and the beans will find support off of that. And the funds, by default, by not taking that support line out in wheat, the funds, the global macro investors, the inflation people out there will come back into this market like they did in July. I mean, it really is about the Federal Reserve overshooting on their Federal Reserve monetary policy. And obviously, I really don't want to become friendly to the market in terms of long term until I see what they do in the September report in the middle of part of September, and their rate hike is at 50 basis points or more. So wheat, I classify kind of off to a side in the shorter term with what Ellen and Rich were talking about in terms of the gaps and the support and resistance lines. I think that makes a lot of sense. The Labor Day holiday for me, I feel like the market should refocus its attention back on the weather and the supply. If we're dry the first half of September, beans let us lower the month of August. I think they were down about 9%, 8 or 9%. Corn was up 9%. And so we recalibrated with corn yield being hit, but beans being wide open and maybe getting better, that could be taken back off the table again. So I'd like to see the beans come out of the gate after the holiday, moving higher, helping the market out as a whole. If that doesn't happen, then that bigger liquidation pressure kind of gets me worried, and that goes back to the dollar and goes back to the wheat.
For each of you, how much of a problem is not having the export sales numbers available until we get to the 15th of September, or at least at the earliest, I suppose? Ellen?
Well, the 15th of September is only 2 weeks away, but I think it is pretty squirrely that USDA just has said that they're not going to put that report out. They're able to do the daily report, and so that accounts for the big sales. But we certainly are seeing a lot more buying than those big sales seem to show. I think it bothers me, yes.
You know, for myself, I have only moderate concern for this issue. As far as issues ahead, I would like to see a little more of a new crop corn sale to justify USDA's current balance sheet number they have. But I'm not going to see a major change on that argument here, at least my viewpoint, for at least the next few weeks here. Soybean side, we've got a good buildup in new crop sales, but I do think there's some valid concern about sales in these next few weeks, especially after we get into the Brazilian discussion regarding planting. I would actually throw in a small wild card for the sales issue. I would actually feel it's more of an issue for the pork market, where part of that rally from July through early August was based on the perception, moderately incorrect, that China was going to be buying a whole lot of U.S. pork. So I think the hog market might be a little more reliant on this deficit information rather than grains myself.
You know, generally speaking, Todd, I feel like the last 10 or 15 years, the trade sentiment has been that demand puts lows in the market and supply puts the highs in the market. And until you find demand, if you're in a downward moving market, it's going to be hard to put a low in place. And so that kind of adds to the flavor that we need weather to come in here if we are going to be blind for the next couple of weeks. My understanding is that we will get daily sales reports if they're over 100,000 metric tons. So that may help some. I'm kind of probably in between Rich and Ellen as far as the severity of it. I do feel as though the livestock fund traders and market in general really do look at the export sales a lot more heavily than the grain traders do, generally speaking. So I take Rich's point very, very well there.
Farm Progress Show is over. Farmers will pull the combines out of the shed. They'll begin to work on them, get them prepped if they haven't already started for harvest. They won't be paying much attention to the market or as much as they can. I'm wondering if there are issues that they may miss that they should be taking advantage of, and I don't know whether there will be or not. Ellen, do you think there will be?
Well, again, you know, the information that farmers, at least the farmers that live at my house, are interested in is supply, and I think they're going to be missing a lot of talk about demand. So I'm encouraging people to broaden their horizons, look at the dollar on a daily basis. Gosh, look at this crude market. I mean, we've dropped $10 this week in crude. You know, keep watching these outside markets for some tip-offs.
You're very worried, aren't you?
I'm worried that the macros look negative, yes.
Oh, I have to ask Mike about that in that case. Mike, you study these macros on a regular basis. Are you worried too?
I am. I couldn't agree more with Ellen. I mean, all marketing year long, I think she and I have both been talking about, and probably Rich too. I mean, but I'm just saying, you know, it has been a massive player in this market. And I think the cattleman and the corn producer in general don't really want to get their hands around that, but that's what we're here for. And I think I am very nervous that the Federal Reserve in Jackson Hole last week said, look, you're going to go through pain, but you're going to like me after this pain, even if it causes a recession, because it would be a lot worse if we had inflation. Well, that's not what a commodity person wants to hear. I just feel simply that way. But as far as the other, I really kind of feel like that what you really got to watch as you go through these next few days is that SEP NOV bean spread and the SEP OCC meal spread. It's still inverted. There's still a supply demand issue being telegraphed in those spreads. And I think it's going to have to work itself out really, really soon.
It's a very Paul Volcker-esque view of the Federal Reserve. I mean, what they're doing is saying, we're going to keep raising rates. There's going to be pain, but it's better than the opposite of inflation, right?
Well, he invokes Paul Volcker, but we also have China slowing down to 3% growth, and Europe maybe going into a depression, depending on how high their energy prices get. So we didn't have that back in the 80s, from my late 70s, early 80s, in that 80, 81 time period, if memory serves me.
And Rich, your macroeconomic view?
No, I actually think that's a great discussion point for both of our discussions here. We just heard in terms of our discussion for us on grain specifically. And I do actually want to give the bull side some small arguments, but also take that back away a little bit here. One concern is that, you know, we would rather have the outside market investors on board with us if we do have a bull rally. But in the case of our uncertainty right now, and especially with Friday's report regarding employment directly ahead, then our three-day weekend, I think a lot of us are still concerned that even if you do get the corn yield number that people want to see, will that trigger the size of the fund-led rally that bulls would really want to argue with here? And I think that's a serious question for us as we have a bit of uncertainty through all of September directly ahead here.
I'll ask one final question of you all, and then if you have a follow-up, you can pick that up. I think, Alan, I'll start with you. Farmers will move grain across the scale into the elevator. What do they do with it?
I think there's going to be in areas that the bushels are light, they're going to put it in storage because they know from a supply standpoint that this market has to go up. In areas in the eastern Corn Belt where the supply looks to be larger, I think there will be some additional selling across the scales. I am not a proponent of selling a lot of corn here. I think the corn story is much more friendly than the bean story.
Are you still making scale up sales for soybeans?
Yes.
Mike Zuzulo, your advice?
I would really probably try and ask them to move their beans off the combine and make bin space for corn at this point, similar to last year, Todd, because we do know that Brazil's going to try and hit it out of the park, and they may just do it this year. We've been pretty fortunate the past couple, 3 years. So I would want to be more of a winter mindset of storing corn for basis pops. I guess the other thing would be, for me, if the wheat lows hold, if those 2020 support levels that we've drawn that trend line off of, that trend line holds, that suggests to me that the corn has some upside. So if you're going to make some off the combine sales, I think buying back in the Jan, Feb, or March contract, whether it's options or futures, wouldn't be a bad idea. But I, you know, with compliance, I would say that generally speaking, would want to talk to you on an individual basis.
And Rich Nelson.
I think we're all kind of in agreement with the soybean story. That's relatively clear until we see some type of continued problems develop with the growing season for Brazil down there these next few months. So at this point, I certainly agree with the discussion about moving some soybeans. If we do want to have reownership, that's just fine here with a limited risk fashion. But if anything, I think producers will, regarding what analysts tell them, I do think that they'll want to hold this corn, at least for a pull into a basis play of some sort here these next few months here.
And a closing comment from each of you. Mike Zuzulo, I'll start with you.
Well, have a great Labor Day. I think the one thing that I learned this past week was the 100-day moving averages in Dease corn and Nove beans were tested, but we just couldn't stay above them. And so I think those are really valuable pieces of technical tools maybe going forward, Todd, as far as maybe shifting into a different trend mindset if we can get back up above those on a closing basis.
Rich Nelson?
You know, as far as issues ahead, I think one closing comment of mine is that we all agree that this outside market issue is probably, if not equal, certainly more interesting to watch here in terms of short-term price impact for us. And we certainly have some questions about long-term impact as well. So I still have a concern here about this general discussion being one of lower prices into 2023. So I would be a little more active on the soybean sales, and certainly for the discussion on corn, moving some movement if we see that pop back up to 680 and above. I would do some reownership on corn if given opportunities at lower prices, though.
And Ellen Dearden.
Watch the basis. We're going to see corn movement out of Illinois and Iowa going west to feedlots, which do have cattle in them. And they are not able to source corn in their local areas to meet that demand. Though they may feed milo, they may feed wheat, but still they're going to want corn. Watch basis.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Rich Nelson from Allendale out of McHenry, Illinois, Mike Zuzlo of GlobalComResearch.com in Atchison, Kansas, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview in Morton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.